Hello. We're good? Okay. Hi. Evening, everybody. You stop rustling your crisps, that would be fantastic. So I'm quite impressed at the turnout for a 6:30 session on data quality, a hot topic. So thank you all for coming. So just to quickly remind you of the session, topic of the session, it's introducing data quality services and its role in an enterprise information management process. I'm James Beresford. I'm a group manager at Avanade, Microsoft's specialist consultancy. A few of my colleagues are here. And what we're going to look at today is DQS, Data Quality Services. So Data Quality Services was introduced in SQL 2012, so it's a new feature. And it allows the managing of data quality issues, analyzing data quality, being able to collect what you find from analyzing and understanding your data, and leveraging that knowledge to be able to cleanse your data interactively or automatically, depending on what's appropriate for your needs. So, a quick, who am I? What am I doing here? I've over a decade of Microsoft BI and data warehousing experience, so I followed the evolution of the ETL tools from DTS through to SSIS and the growth of SSIS from slightly clunky OLAP tool into the rather sophisticated tabular model thing it is today. I've worked in a wide variety of industries, banking, transport, education, and insurance have been the big ones. I've got a bit of a social media presence, so I blog at BI Monkey. I tend to cover off a bit about data quality services, an awful lot about SSIS, and of late a lot about big data and the Hadoop on Azure platform. And I also tweet at BI_Monkey. So, introducing data quality services, the goals of the session today. I want to introduce to you the data quality services tool, the concepts that are involved in it, and some of the terminology that it uses. And then I want to showcase automating those processes and how they integrate into an overall enterprise information management process. So the outcomes for you for today should be to be able to understand that you now have a tool in SQL Server to manage data quality, to automate data cleansing, and also to be able to use that to support master data management. Before we get stuck in, I'm going to just tell you a little about a data quality experience that I had when I was working a while back, the shipping insurance company. This formula here is expressing that one container ship is not the same as three whopping great container ships. Seems fairly self-evident. But for this shipping insurance company, one of the very important metrics was the tonnage of a ship. So every ship weighs a certain amount, from little barges that weigh about 5 tons up to these whopping great container ships that weigh about 70,000 tons. And what the BI department had to do was to add up all of these tonnages, and then we used that to calculate the size of the fleet that we had insured, and that would then go to reinsurers, and that would then drive some insurance costs in turn. Now, some underwriters did package deals, where what they did was they charged the client one big number under a big sort of dummy ship, and then entered all of the ships in the account, but never entered any tonnages against them. Okay. Didn't really matter as far as the business was concerned. The money still came in. The underwriters were happy. The money still came in. And most of the time, the BI team actually knew about these deals and then could go, right, okay, I need to account for this. I need to add this volume of tonnage back into all our equations and put them on top so that we could calculate the amount that we had insured in total. But over time, the underwriters did a few more of those deals and kind of didn't tell us. And then there were some staff changes and people forgot about it. And then when I joined up, I started doing all the calculations and trying to figure out, hey, you know, how much shipping have we really got insured? And it turned out that we'd actually fallen short by a good sort of 10-15%. Okay, so 10-15%, maybe not a big deal. But then we had to go back to the reinsurers and we said, okay, look, you know, we've made a bit of a slip up in our calculations. We need to go back. This is the new number. And they said, okay, no, look, thanks. That's great. Thanks for being honest with us. That'll be a couple of million bucks. So I think it indicates that, you know, data quality, you know, sometimes it can just be an annoyance, you know, crap that you have to deal with in your dimensions. Sometimes it can have a really deep impact upon your business. And for us, because the shipping company ran on an ancient mainframe, there wasn't a way that we could have used to fit, or we couldn't, there was nothing that we could have done to fix that back at the mainframe. The only way we could have done it was to be filtering those records at the other end as they came out and went into our BI systems. And so this is a case where data quality services would have been a great tool to pick up that kind of stuff and say, look, a ship's come in, it's got no tonnage, we need to fire this back and pick up an error. So I've got a quick question for you all. If you go for a show of hands. How many of you have been 2 years old? Most of you. Okay, those of you who didn't put your hands up, go see your doctor. So I'm going to present to you your first data quality problem. Shape sorting. Trying to get those little shapes into those holes. My daughter, who's now 2.5, managed this about 6 months ago. But it's one that, you know, we can all get to grips with. We've got to try and get our data into the right slots in the field. So sometimes it's about data typing, sometimes it's about the right value. But for today, we're going to look at it from a 2-year-old's perspective. We're going to look at shape sorting. And so, as I said, data quality is shape sorting. What we know about a shape, you know, a triangle has 3 sides. In our particular shape sorting kit, it might be blue. Those things that we know all form our picture of data quality. And so in the world of world of data quality, there is good data. And this is the stuff that just happily goes into the slot and drops in without any trouble. And you have to admire my animation skills here. There is also bad data that, you know, no matter how much you hit it with that little plastic hammer, it ain't going in the hole. And then finally, there is repairable data that sometimes hitting it with that little plastic hammer, well, it might break a bit, but it'll go in the hole and it's all good. So I'm going to introduce our first data quality service terms. The collection of shapes, everything we know about these shapes, they call it a knowledge base. So what we know about the number of sides a shape has, what the name of the shape is, the color it has, that all forms part of our knowledge base about our shapes. What we know about an individual shape, we call a domain. And how we sort through that data and manage that data, we call that a domain rule. And I've got 4 scenarios here that are basically the only options that you can come with. On the top left hand, we've got our correct data, the stuff that we know is right. On the top right, we've got our red square, which is our invalid data. There's nothing we can do with it. It's not supposed to go in this hole. On the bottom left, we've got, you know, the errors, the ones that we can squeeze through if we just massage it and treat it right. And we've also got our green triangle. It's our new data, the stuff we just don't know about and we haven't encountered before. So, how do we manage all this? One of the tools that we're given in SQL 2012 is the data quality client. And what this allows us to do is to create or maintain knowledge bases. So that's our knowledge about our collection of shapes. And also what's called a data quality project. And a data quality project is a means to pass your data through your knowledge base and visualize the results as they come out the other side. So we're going to get into our first demo, which is creating a knowledge base using knowledge discovery. So, as an enterprising 2-year-old, we want to collect our built-up experience from our fellow shape sorters, and we're going to do that by creating a knowledge base using a list of results that have been fed to us by the other 2 years at Kindy, 2-year-olds at Kindy. Excuse me a moment. So, this is the data quality client, and it's broken up into 3 sections. On the left-hand side, we have knowledge base management, and this is, this is where you will manage and create your knowledge bases. In the middle, we've got data quality projects. So this is where we create our new data quality projects, and we pass our data through those and interactively cleanse it and see the effect of our knowledge bases. And then on the right-hand side, we've got our administration section, and this is just where we can see how the knowledge base has been used and how we can manage some of our configurations and settings. But we want to create a new knowledge base, so we'll click on New Knowledge Base, and we'll give it a name, and we'll call it Shapes Demo. And a description, Shapes Demo for Tech Ed. Okay. So now we're going to look at the activities that we can do when we're actually creating a knowledge base. So the first thing that comes up is domain management. Domain management is actually when you already know about your data. So you know what values are acceptable. You know what rules you want to apply. You know what fields you're going to create a knowledge base for. So you can just go in and just build all that up from the ground up using the knowledge that's in your head. The next option down is knowledge discovery. And this is actually where you say, okay, I don't know everything, or I don't know enough. I'm just going to pass my data set through, and I'm going to let data quality services do the work and figure out what fields I've got, what rules I should apply. And then last of all, we've got matching policies. And this is where you use data quality services to do deduplication and matching of data. But we're not going to touch on that today. We're going to look at knowledge discovery. So we'll choose that option, and we'll move on. So the first thing we need to do is pick our data source. And we have the option of using SQL Server or Excel files. Excel also covers CSV. So we're going to load this CSV list that our kindy kids have provided to us of all the shapes that we know about. And because I've picked the first row as header, it's going to allow us to pick up the column names automatically. And so we're going to work with color, we're going to work with shape, and we're going to work with sides. We're going to ignore ID because it's just a meaningless column. And now for each of these, we need to just create a domain to throw these into. So we'll click on Create Domain. And here for color, we'll give it a name, color, and we'll give it a description of color. And because it's a string data type, there's a lot of smart stuff that data quality services can do to clean things automatically, strip out special characters, remove leading and trailing spaces. But because this is a simple example, we're just going to leave everything at default and click OK. Similarly, we're going to create one for shape. Same thing applies. Just going to create a domain, call it shape, give it a description of shape, leave everything else as default, click OK. And finally, for sides, we need to do the same thing. Give it a name, give it a description. But we'll note, because it's integer, there's less clever stuff that DQS can do to clean it up because a number is a number. OK. So that's all the work we can do here. We're just creating our domains, and now we're going to try and pass our data into it and let DQS client do the analysis process. So we'll click on our start button, and what that'll do is it'll bring the data into DQS. It'll run some analysis over the values that are in there, looking at the values that it finds that are unique, looking at the values that are empty. So that's run through, so let's have a look at the stats that follow on from that. And we're going to look at an individual domain. We'll look at the shape domain, and we can see from here that we have 89 new values, 8 of those are unique, 99, so all of them are valid because there's no domain rules to clean them up. And when we look at this completeness bar that's hanging on the right, we can see that it's 90% complete. So we've got 10% of the fields are just completely empty. So now we've had a look at those stats, let's go and work in a little bit more detail around the values. So we'll look at each individual domain in a bit more depth. So we're going to start out looking at the sides domain. And the first thing we're going to do is uncheck this show only new box. And what that'll reveal is this DQS null value. So every time you create a domain, you get DQS null created. And DQS null is just a holder for blank fields, empty strings, but it's created for every single domain. We want to reject these values that are empty. So we're going to change the data type to invalid. And invalid in DQS terms means that it's a record that we reject. If we have a look at the rest of the numbers, you know, they look okay. So we'll leave those as they are. And we'll now move on to one of our other domains. And we'll look at shape. So again, we'll uncheck show only new, and we'll make sure that we reject all of those null and empty records. Then we have a look at the other values that this knowledge-based discovery has found. And we've got this first value here, which is foon. And I've never heard of a shape called a foon outside of a Spike Milligan novel. So I'm going to reject that. And then we look down further below triangle, and we've got something called triangle plus, and we've got tringle. I'm beginning to guess what this might be. And you can see under tringle, there's a little red underscore like a spell checker. So DQS has a spell check baked in. So let's see what that shows up. Oh, there we go, right at the top. We can see that there's triangle. So let's accept that. Seems like a good value. And we can see now That's become nested under triangle because that's what it's going to be corrected to, and the data type's changed to error. So this is your repairable data. Similarly with triangle plus, it's not picked up any spelling errors, but we want to fix that. We think that should be a triangle. So we'll change the data type to error. And we'll just type in the correct value that we want, which is triangle. And again, you see that now rolls up to triangle. And I've also got this duff record of credit, so I'm just going to quickly delete that. And I think that's all we need to do with this one. So the next last one we'll look at is color. And again, we're going to kill off our DQS nulls. And as you look down the data, we've got orange. Okay, another job for the spell checker. So we quickly right-click. And second on the list, sure, it says orange. Okay, well, that seems like a sensible value to change it to. So we'll do that. It's now correct, turned to an error, and it's nested under orange. So I think that's a good outcome. So now we'll finish. We'll publish, which is basically saving to the server. And click on OK to acknowledge that the publishing is complete. So, what did we just see? We saw creating a knowledge base from our data using the knowledge discovery process. We managed to set values as correct, as error, or invalid. And we managed to teach the knowledge base some simple auto-correction using domain rules. And now, what can we do? We can keep our knowledge about data quality in one single location. So we don't now have it spread all over various stored procedures and bits of code in our ETL. We've got it encoded in a single location. We can accept, we can correct, and we can reject values. And what we can also do is we can update it as part of an ongoing process. So having created this knowledge base, that's not the end of it. It's not like we've written the code, then we test it, go live, and then that's it, we forget about it. As new data comes in, as new information comes in, we can update that, we can publish it up to the server, and we can make that an ongoing process rather than one lockdown that we've completed. So I'm going to do a quick pop quiz now and ask who owns a knowledge base. Do this by show of hands. Should maintaining knowledge bases be done by, first of all, data quality professionals? Couple of takers. BI developers. No BI developers in the room want to claim this job. Users. Smart audience. I'm guessing no one's going to put their hand up for Microsoft now. There's a few. The idea is that through the data quality client, it's supposed to be user-friendly enough that this isn't something that becomes something that's delivered by IT pros. It's something that's managed by users and maintained by users. We may need to be a little bit careful about how we make our knowledge bases go live, but beyond that, it's supposed to be a user-driven process. So the next thing we're going to look at is creating a composite domain. Now, what a composite domain is it recognizes the fact that different types of data interact. So the example we'll pick up here is that a particular shape has a number of sides. There is no such thing as a four-sided triangle. There is no such thing as a seven-sided square. There is an interrelation between something being called a triangle and it having three sides. Now, which side of the data you want to trust, whether you trust the number of sides or you trust the name of the shape, that's up to you. But you can force one thing to drive the value of another. And so we'll demonstrate this with a nice simple example. So we'll go and open the data quality project that we created, or sorry, the knowledge base we created earlier, Shapes Demo. And this time you'll note we're going into domain management because we're applying some knowledge that we have. We don't need to go through the data quality discovery, or sorry, the knowledge discovery process to find that out. So we'll move on. And we'll create what's called a composite domain. And we're going to do that using the shape and the sides fields. So click on create composite domain, give it a name, shape and sides, give it a description, shapes and sides. And then we'll pick the domains that we want to include. So we want to include the shape, and we want to include the sides. And we'll click OK. So the next thing we need to do is create a rule around this. And what we want to do is we're going to create a rule that says that triangles have to have three sides. So we'll create a new rule, and we'll give it the obvious name, triangles have three sides. And then down in the rule, we're going to say, okay, so when the shape, when the value is triangle, so we're going to drive that when a triangle is going to be the driver. And I'm going to quickly have a look at some other things here. So I'm just going to say there's a lot more power here. There's regular expressions, there's patterns, this is the value numeric, this is the value date time. There's a lot more we can leverage, but we're going for something simple here. So I'll add an extra component to the rule. When the number of sides, when the value is not equal to 3. So when we encounter a piece of data where the names, the shape's a triangle and the value is not equal to 3, we're going to take the number of sides and we're going to force the value of that to 3. So we're going to say that what we're doing here is placing trust in the name of the shape and use that to drive other data. And that's it, though. We've created that rule now. So we'll click Finish, and we'll publish, and we'll click OK, and that's up in the server. So what did we just see? We've now seen that we can use values from one domain to interact with values from another domain. And what we can do is now that we can manage interdependent fields for data quality purposes. So going back to my original example within shipping, I might have even been able to make it more sophisticated and say that if a ship was a barge, it would have to be between 5 and 100 tons, because that's sensible. If it's a container ship, it has to be between 20,000 and 70,000 tons. So you can actually start getting a bit more sophisticated and understanding the interactions between the data can make sure that you can capture errors in your data as it's flowing through based on the knowledge that you have about what should be there, not necessarily what is there. So there's a couple of other features that I haven't covered off, but I just want to quickly make you aware of. There's this creature called term-based relations, which is one of the worst ways of describing autocorrect. And as my example up there is it changes ink to incorporated. And all it does is, as a domain comes in, it just does some quick auto-corrections and fixes a few things. So if you want consistency in your addresses, for example, you don't want ST, you want street, you don't want RD, you want road, you can use term-based relations to drive that happening. The second feature is reference data. So it's possible for data quality services to reach out to the Azure data market and use external data sources as a means of validating your data. The most obvious example is Melissa data. So you can take your address data and you can run match your knowledge base and tell it to fire off to Melissa data and validate an address, and then Melissa data can fire back a correction. So next we're going to look at data quality products. So this is the application of a knowledge base through the data quality client. And the idea here is that we can interactively process the data and then we can output the results. So let's go into demo land. So we're going to take the list of shapes that we had earlier, and we're going to push it through the knowledge base. So we'll go and create a new data quality project. And as before, we'll give it a name, shapes demo, and a description, shapes demo for TechEd. And we know we have to pick our knowledge base, so we want to use the shapes demo one that we just created. And we can see the domains that have come up on the side, and the composite domains as well. And the activity we're going through here is cleansing, because this isn't a matching policy, we want to clean our data. So we'll leave that as default, and then we'll move on. So as before, we're picking our data source, and we're going to use the same data set that we used to build our knowledge base in the first place. And because I've used the first row's header, it's picked up the columns and it's automatically matched the names and the domains based on the name of the field. So the other thing we need to do is we need to include our composite domain that we've built. So we'll click on View Select Composite Domains. And we've got the one there, Shapes and Sides, which we'll click and we'll say OK. That's all we need to do here, so we'll move on. As before, we're going to go and process and analyze the data, but this time we're going to be pushing it against the rules that we've created. So DQS will load the data up into the DQS client and run it through and apply those rules that we've created. We can have a look at some of the stats. So we had 99 records. Out of those, 34 were correct, 24 got corrected, and 41 were flagged as invalid. We don't have any suggested records because we're not doing a matching policy. This only applies for matching. And if we have a look in detail at one, so our shapes and size composite domain, we had 24 correct values. And if we scroll across, we can have a look at the completeness bars. So we can show you we now have 17% missing data because we've got two fields combined, so the missing values from both of those are contributing. And we've got an accuracy 71% correct, 29% invalid. So what we want to do, we'll have a look at the individual fields in a bit more depth. So we'll move on and we'll manage and view the results. So we'll start off looking at color. And we can see here, under our invalid records, we've got our DQS null. So all of these have been rejected. There's 14 of them, and you can see across the far end that it's got that reject flag associated with it. Under corrected, we've got our borange, which has now been spell-checked and corrected to orange, and that's now going to be approved because that's now a valid record. And under correct, we've got those values and they're all perfectly normal, so they've just sailed through and been approved. So let's have a look at how our composite domain has worked. So, and if we focus on the invalid records, you can see a lot of the ones with null have been rejected here at the top. And if we scroll down a little bit, we can see here, for example, we've got our foon, which has been rejected. And the reason for that, the domain value and the domain shape. So the shape is the domain has taken priority over the composite domain. Under our corrected records, we've got Tringle with the wrong number of sides. But if we have a look at how that's been corrected, the shape has been corrected to triangle, and the number of sides has been corrected to 3. And that's called out there that the last rule that was applied was the triangles has 3 sides rule. Below we've got Tringle, but with the right number of sides. So the only thing that's been corrected there is the shape. And we can pick up there that the reason for that was the domain value in the domain shape. And again, we look at our correct values. Our squares with 4 sides and our triangles with 3 sides have gone through. But also our crosses and stars, which we haven't created any rules for, they've sailed through as correct because there isn't anything in the composite domain to accept or reject them. So the next thing to do is just look at how we could output this data if we wanted to share it further. So we can export it to SQL Server or Excel or CSV. But what we're more interested in here is what output we would get from that. And so if we have a look at this second record, we've got Tringle is the source, the shape source field. The output is triangle, so we can see that it's been corrected. And then if we look at the overall status of the shape, it'll show up as corrected. And if we scroll along a little further, we can see actually that the overall record status is invalid. So though we corrected one component in the record, there's something else there that's actually caused it to be rejected and be thrown away. And that's our work completed on our data quality project. So what did we just see? So we've seen interactive cleansing of data. And we've seen the capacity to export that cleansed data set and understanding what was in that data set that caused errors. So what can we do? We can now clean data. So we can receive a set of data, some customer data, and we can pass it through our knowledge base and get that corrected data come back, and we can handle our error records. And we can export those error records and share them with our colleagues and say, this record failed because this field was wrong, or you know, this overall picture was wrong, this composite domain rejected a rule. So I'll very quickly scan over some other DQS features that I didn't cover off. So it's largely around the matching and deduplication. So matching has the capacity to do some fuzzy matching, but it's important, or depending on how interested you are in these things, to know it uses a different technology to SQL Server and to SSIS. It uses different algorithms under the hood. But within the matching, there's a lot of power. So you can, if you're matching two customer records, for example, with addresses, you can apply weights to different fields. So you can say, well, maybe if I'm in a telco, it's actually a requirement that the phone numbers match on two records before I'll consider this the same company, same customer. Or alternatively, you can say, oh, I'm just matching on address, and maybe I place more value in the street name than I do in the street number, because I know there's some problems in our system in terms of matching the street number. So you can create some very powerful matching rules, and then you can then use that to drive a deduplication process and actually start cleaning up your data and identifying duplicate records. So now we've built our knowledge base and we're a little bit more comfortable with it, we want to start automating it. We want to start integrating this with our normal data quality or our normal data warehousing processes or our data load processes. And obviously our favorite tool for doing this is SSIS. And in SQL 2012, as part of the exciting rounded corners that we got with SSIS, we also got the DQS cleansing task. The DQS cleansing task enables you to send data through to the knowledge base and retrieve the results in a fairly similar way to what we just seen with the data quality project. So let's get into having a look at how this works. So going back to kindergarten land, we want to automate this, so we've asked our dad to build us an SSIS package because ETL is hard and boring when you're two. But being a boring dad, he's insisting on showing you how it works. So we're sat on his knee and he's explaining how this hangs together. At the heart of everything is the DQS cleansing task. As I said before, this is how we communicate back to the DQS server. And we get our records back and we can have a look at the different statuses of the information that's come through. The data flow itself is fairly normal. We're starting off with a flat file source. We've got to do a little bit of data conversion because DQS, SSIS, still very strict about data typing. Pass it through the DQS cleansing component. And then out of the DQS component, we'll take those results and we'll pass them through a conditional split. And we'll use the different statuses that we get coming out of DQS cleansing to send it to different targets. So before we actually start executing this, what we'll do is we'll dig into the individual components a little bit, particularly the DQS cleansing and the conditional split. So within DQS cleansing, first thing to note, we've got a new type of connection manager, the DQS cleansing connection manager. And this is there, so it's a new connection manager type that's there to specifically talk to the DQS server and allow you to process data through knowledge bases. So once you've established your connection, you pick your knowledge base that's available on the server, and then you'll get your list of available domains down there. So if we then have a look at how the mapping tab works. No major surprises. You take your input columns, you match them to your domains. But it's important to note here that the composite domains, you can't actually explicitly call out that you're referencing a composite domain, but if you're using all the fields that a composite domain has, it will automatically get called. So if you actually don't want to use a composite domain, the only way to do that is to create a copy of a knowledge base that doesn't have those composite domains in it. Okay, so that's all we need to see here. So we'll close this off. And now we'll take a look at the conditional split. We can see here that the different outputs, we're using the overall record status to drive our records to different locations. So we've got correct, corrected, new, and invalid, which are the default statuses that DQS will produce. And just because I've been doing ETL for so long, I've also got a nice bucket for the unknowns that inevitably will show up at some time. So let's run this. So I put a data viewer after the DQS cleansing task so we can see what comes out the other side. And as we can see here, if we take a look at the second record, it's very similar to what we saw in the data quality project. We've got our tringle corrected to triangle. We've got the status. And if we scroll across to the right, we can see that, again, that same record's been rejected as invalid, although here we can see it's because the size value was actually null, so that DQS null was causing the record to be rejected. And we can see here the counts that have come out the other side. So we've got 34 correct rows, 24 corrected rows, 41 invalid rows. So exactly the same as we saw in the data quality project, so we're getting the same results, which is always nice. So what have we just seen? We've seen the automatic cleansing of data, and we've seen how we can manage the different results. And what, I've overstepped a bit. So within managing the different results, obviously I was chucking this all to a set of row counts to just dump it out. If this was a real system, we might say that the corrected data gets into our warehouse. The invalid stuff gets sent off to a data quality team to assess and figure out how they fix. And the new records might come back into whoever's managing the data quality client to say, right, we need to have a look in the knowledge base and we need to add these new values in, or we need to decide whether to reject or accept them. So what can we do? We can now clean data in an integrated manner as opposed to an interactive manner. What we've seen is how, because the knowledge base is something that's user managed, it's possible for user input to data quality to affect the data warehouse, which may or may not be a good thing, depending on your point of view. And the really important thing here, I think, is that updating data quality is now independent of updating the ETL. So I've dealt with these kind of problems before, and I've ended up dealing with them by building horrendous stored procedures that scan over the data and deal with each interaction, or having to build a huge amount of code in my ETL to manage all of this. Now we have a tool to do this, and when we want to update our data quality stuff, there's no need to revisit a whole bunch of stored procs or a whole bunch of ETL and recode it in a lot of different places. It's got managed in one central location. So next we're going to have a look at how this fits into an EIM process. So what is an EIM process? One of the key messages that came out of SQL 2012 was the idea of credible, consistent data. So what they actually mean by that is that you get data that is accurate, that is trustworthy, and that is managed. And this often means doing it across several different systems, several different silos. So going back to the customer record, you might have customers that are in your ordering system. You might have customers that are in your marketing system. You might have customers in some legacy system that you've never quite got around to cleaning up, but you know that some of them still work with you. Trying to keep your data consistent across all three of those systems is what would be termed a challenge. And it's much easier to say, okay, well, let's not deal with it in those three different places. Let's create a new place where we can manage that, and then that becomes our central reference point. And that central reference point is Master Data Services. And Master Data Services provides to us a central store of data that we can rely upon and trust. It provides web and Excel UIs to actually interact with that data. And it also provides easy access to Master Data through subscription views, which function effectively as database views, and also through various APIs for those people who are clever enough to program them. So how does this fit if we go back into shape sorting? So we want to, as our two-year-old, we want to create a central reference that other kindergartens can use so we can prove that we are the smartest kid in the smartest kindy. So the first thing we've got to do is we've got to create an entity. We've got to create an object that holds all of this information about what we know about our shapes. It's also got to be useful. It's also got to be able to handle updates. So it can't be a static thing that just is created once and doesn't ever change. And, you know, somewhere along the line, our kindy kids are going to get to, they're going to be 3 years old, and they're going to face pentagons and hexagons with big numbers like 5 sides and 6 sides, and they've got to be able to handle that data. And then, obviously, to feed our little 3-year-old ego, it's very important that we can share this knowledge. And the way to do this, we're going to talk about, is publishing it with subscription views. So that when some kindy kid finds a new shape and wants to put it in his sorter, he's got a central reference that he can go and look it up in. And so now we're going to go into quite an epic demo where we're going to integrate DQS processes with MDS processes. So the first thing we're going to do is we're going to create a model in Master Data Services through the web GUI. So we'll go to System Administration to create a new model. And we'll give it a name of shape sorting. We'll uncheck the create entity with the same name as model option because we just want to create an empty bucket. We'll click save. And we can see there that we've now created this shape sorting model. So the next thing to do is go into SSIS, and we'll use our DQS cleansing component to capture that knowledge and pick out the pick out the correct data that we know about from data quality services. So this is a similar flow as before, flat file source through to DQS cleansing. We dump our incorrect records out to a row count, but we use a group by to collect our correct or corrected records, and we'll group those together to get a distinct, and then we'll write them out to a flat file. And that flat file will form the basis of our entity. So we'll go through and we'll run this. And we'll see from the data viewer that's coming out of the group by that we've got our corrected results, our four-sided squares, our three-sided triangles, and our stars with 10 sides, and our crosses with 12. So we've written that out to a, we'll write that out to our text file. And now what we want to do is we want to actually use this as a base to build an entity. So we'll now roll into Excel. And we'll open our file. And we'll be able to see here that it's got the same data that we've just seen in the data viewer. So no surprises there. So what we'll next do is we'll connect to Master Data Services through Excel. We'll chug through and connect to the server. And what shows up is the Master Data Explorer. So we can just validate that we've got our model here. And we've got our shape sorting model. Defaults to version 1 because that's the only one that we've got at the moment. Then we'll highlight this data and we'll use it to create an entity. So we click on the Create Entity button on the Master Data Services ribbon. And we can see we've got our range of data selected. We've got our headers for our column names. We're going to pick our shape sorting model. We're going to give it an entity name of shapes. We're going to pick out the code. So the unique identifier for us, we're going to place trust in the name shape. And we're going to use that as the name for the column as well. I'll click on OK. Now what this is going to do is this is going to go back to the MDS server. It's going to create that entity, and it's going to load that data into that entity. And then it will refresh that back to us in Excel. And it'll flicker around the screen a little bit first. But now we can see this is a query back to the Master Data Services server, and we've extracted that correct value. Sorry, we've loaded that correct value, and it's now being displayed in the spreadsheet. So just to validate that this is all kosher and it's all happening on the server as well, we're going to go into our model and just have a look through the Data Explorer. Slowly loading its thing. And here we can see that those are exactly the same entities that we just loaded into Excel. So we can confirm it's all across the board, everything's where the way it should be. So the next thing we need to do is make this available. So what we're going to do is we're going to create a subscription view. And as I said, a subscription view, it functions like a database view that provides a window onto the Master Data Services data. So we'll go into Integration Management. And we'll click on the Create Views option. And just click on this Add button. And we'll give it a name. We'll call it Shapes. We'll load it into our, we'll take it from our shape sorting model. We'll use version 1 because that's what we've got. We'll use our entity of shapes. And we'll use the leaf members. And that just means that we'll just use the lowest level data, which is fine because we have no hierarchies. We'll just click Save. And now we can see that that's been published. Just to validate that this is, again, all working as we expected, we'll go and have a look in our Master Data Services database. And as we open up our views, right up the top, there's our shapes view. And we'll just quickly query that and just check that the data's there as we'd expect it to be. And And if you zoom in the middle, we can see we've got our name, our code fields, and our attribute of size all populated. So this can now be referenced as if any other view, but it's coming live out of our MDS system. Now, as I said, we've got to be able to update this. And so we need to account for the fact that there's new data coming through. So we're going to go in, and I'm just going to quickly show the rules that I've created for the hexagon and pentagons coming in. So we're opening the knowledge base that we've created for SSIS. We'll have a look at the shape and size composite domain and the rules therein. Scroll down the bottom, and we can see hexagons are six-sided, pentagons are five-sided. Pretty logical stuff. And the rules constructed exactly the same way as I did for when I was building the composite domain for the triangle. We've got the shape and size interact, and we drive the size value to a specific number. So now we're going to integrate this in SSIS. So again, we're revisiting similar things, but at the tail end of this now, we can see that we're loading into MDS staging. When you create an entity in Master Data Services, it also creates a staging entity where you can actually load fresh data into it. So you can, through a process like this, load data into a database and get the Master Data Services and client to then pick that up and process that data in. So that's what we're going to do here. And again, similar data source. We've got our new list of shapes. We're going to push it through the cleansing component. We're going to only correct the stuff that we're interested in. But we're going to do one other thing here that's of interest. We're going to go into the lookup component. And you can see under the connection, what we're doing, we're referencing that shape subscription view. And any data that comes through that's new, we're going to send that through the lookup no match output. And that's what we're going to send through to our MDS staging tables. It's also worth noting, I've put a little derived column on there. It's called MDS stuff, but there's a few flags and fields that need to be added to the data for MDS to know how to process it when it lands in the staging tables. Obviously, then we then push that through to the MDS staging. So we'll now execute that, and it'll now, instead of firing it off to a text file or some dead end, it's actually going to load this directly into Master Data Services. Watching SSIS hasn't got any more exciting, sorry. Follows very shortly. So here, this is the data that we've captured out the other end. So we've got our pentagon and our hexagon. So we've now got our new unique records of our valid data. So this has actually made its way into MDS. So if we have a look at the integration management, what it'll show is the data that we've actually loaded into our staging tables. And we can see here we've got a batch of data to be processed. It's going into the shapes entity. It's got two records. And we're just going to click that start batches to kick that along. And we're going to load version one of the model because that's all we've got. And we can see that it's queued to run. So every 60 seconds or so, Master Data Services has a job that runs through PIT and looks for fresh data to arrive and to be processed in. So we just need to click F5 a few times to actually see this refresh. And then another time. And there we go, it's completed. So to validate what that means, we're just going to refresh our query that we had in Excel earlier that pointed at our MDS table. And as it refreshes, we can now see that we've now got this fresh data. The hexagon and pentagon are now loaded into our Master Data Services instance. Oops. So what did we just see? We've seen that the knowledge that we've had from data quality services can be captured in MDS using Excel. So we dump that data out to a text file, and that can form the basis for us actually building a Master Data Services entity based on what we know is clean data that's been pushed through DQS. Our new knowledge is then going to be discovered about our hexagons and pentagons. That's new knowledge, and we've captured it in data quality services. But then we've managed to transfer that captured knowledge into MDS using SSIS by loading that fresh data into the staging tables and making it part of the automated process.
James, just a question.
Yeah?
So it means we can use this sample data to train our models if we want to use that in data mining area. So these sample data, we can use this to train our models to
Potentially, yes. I'm not quite sure how it tied into data mining, but if you're cleaning data for a data mining process, then yes, you could integrate it as part of that. Okay, so what can we do now we've got this? We can use data quality services to provide the foundation for building our master data. We can use DQS as a means of providing updated, clean master data. And to some extent, we can also have a user-driven EIM process. So the user would control what actually qualified as clean data. And the user would have insight over master data services as to what data they would actually want to approve. And you can put that through workflows and control so that maybe the person who's updating the knowledge base may not be the person who actually approves whether the data gets into the final process. So, rolling back to the start, the aim of the session was to introduce data quality services and show a little bit about its role in an EIM process. So, I'm introducing DQS. I've explained to you the concepts. I've explained to you some of the terminology that's used. And at the tail end, I've showcased how we can automate that, how we can integrate it into an EIM process. So before we roll into questions, just say tomorrow you can find me at the speaker meet and greet, 11 to 11.30 in the speaker's lounge. And as I said, going back to social media, you can follow my blog at bimonkey.com. I tweet at bi_monkey and also reasonably frequently posting on the MSDN, SSOS, and DQS forums. So that's the formal presentation over. Happy to throw things open for questions. Thank you.
With the rules that you created, is there any kind of control over, the use of the composite rules, the composite domain rules with the domain rules? Because it wasn't clear which one it would, check first.
Okay.
It could give a different result.
Okay, so the question was around how composite domains and domains get priority. The answer is that the domain rule gets priority first. So I think I showed that when you're auto-correcting the triangle with the wrong number of values and the wrong spelling of triangle. It corrects the value of triangle first, then it applies the composite domain rule and pushes it through. So the domain rule always takes priority.
Yes. Hey. How can you set up the composite domain rules that actually contradict each other?
The question is, can you set up composite domain rules that contradict each other? I think the short answer is yes. I have no idea what will happen when you do that.
Following on from that, is there a way to set precedence for composite rules? So say you had an element of polygon or something, and you wanted to correct everything that was triangle, square, or whatever before, and then anything else within the polygon?
Okay, so the question was around, is there any priority that you can put around the application of rules? Not that I'm aware of. There's no setting to actually say that it gets processed in a particular order. The only thing I'm aware of is, obviously, as we've mentioned, domains get processed before composite domains, but what order domains get processed in, I think you'd probably have to try and manage that through cascading rules, but that would probably get quite tricky. Yep. Okay, so the question is around performance. So in the original release, it was pretty bad. In CU1, which came out about 4 months ago, they did quite a bit of work to speed things up. If you're doing it interactively through the data quality client, the way that it's engineered under the hood, it's much better at multi-threading and it's a lot faster. If you're doing it automated, it's fairly linear around the number of fields that you've got and the number of rows you've got. So it's a very linear relationship. And there is a white paper available that speaks to how fast it'll pump data through. From a practical experience, you don't want to be pushing anything much above 100,000 rows through it. Hi. Sorry, could you repeat that?
Enabling DQS from the NDS configuration side, what does that actually give you then? What does that do for you?
Okay, so the question's around enabling. So within MDS, there is some DQS features that can be enabled. What that actually is for is that MDS uses DQS to power deduplication. So if you enable that, then you can actually leverage the deduplication capabilities of data quality services. I think the reason why they've done that, as opposed to leveraging something out of SSIS or T-SQL, is because the matching algorithms they use within DQS are more powerful and apparently more accurate.
You showed the demo where you were going from DQS to MDS, sort of. You discovered the two new records and put it in there.
Yeah.
The other way around, like you already have this master data services, where you define the pentagon should be 5, okay, and then it should put it in sort of data cleaning.
Yeah, so I guess the ultimate question is there any way of updating DQS automatically? No. The only way at the moment to manage DQS is through the client. So there's no APIs, there's no means of actually building knowledge bases dynamically. It's strictly a one-way path at the moment. Hopefully that's something that's going to get addressed in future releases.
Right. How does it go with XML?
How does it go with XML? I haven't tried and I wouldn't want to.
That's just
the question. Yeah. Hi.
So you mentioned so there is no API, so you couldn't do like real-time validation via an API from other applications.
Yeah, there are, at the moment, Data Quality Services has no exposed API, so there isn't any way of automatically calling its functions.
Is the information held in a table?
So where is the Data Quality Services information held? It is held in a set of databases, although I haven't actually dug into them to find out whether that information is in any way usable. Hi.
You showed us the user access to the master data services, which was via Excel.
Yeah.
Is the user access to the DQS part of it to do, for example, when you had, you know, Tringle and Orange or whatever it was, and fixing that, how do you get the users to do?
Okay.
Like, so
okay, so the question is around how do the users access the data quality rules and knowledge bases. So the data quality client is a thick client, so you can install that on your users' machines, and then connect that to a SQL Server database. So it's not through Management Studio, it's a dedicated standalone tool.
You can use Excel as well, can you? You've got Excel.
No, you can't use Excel. Is it a smart client? The answer to that, I think, is no at this point. It would just be captured as part of a normal SQL Server update.
Supports of permissions and stuff, even if you install a thing, take client on customer's machine, so how do you actually work permissions, or how do you actually give access to the user to update or?
Okay, so the question's around security and administration. So there's, it's managed through SQL Server SQL Server security roles, and there's three of them, administrator, user, and viewer, and basically you chuck your users into one of those categories, and then they'd be able to actually read the content when they connected to the server. Oh, one more. So the question is, you know, what controls do you have over creating new entities in master data services if you're doing it from the Excel side? I'd imagine there is. So, to be honest, I'm not a great expert in master data services. So I think the answer is there is security around what you can do within MDS, but how that would actually work in this context, I'm afraid I don't have the answer. Okay, so the question's around the roadmap. I don't know the answer to that either. I'm afraid they're not being very forthcoming at the moment about what's coming up. But I mean, if the product gets uptake, they'll improve it. Similar story to Master Data Services. If it doesn't, then it might just die. We'll find out. So the question is around what statuses there are. So there are those three statuses, four statuses: new, correct, corrected, or invalid. There isn't kind of check. Invalid is basically your check status.
So if you want to do something like that, you just create a domain or a field which is using something to deal with that later on.
Yeah, that would probably be the best way of looking at it. Okay. All right, well, look, I think that's enough questions. Thank you, everybody. Just a quick reminder around completing evals, if you could, that would be greatly appreciated, giving me high marks.